You're listening to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
I'd like to say one thing, though. I got screwed. We got Mr. Earl Hebner over here, a crooked referee, that if he had gone by the Tupac question, I would have got that W. Dan Riccio screwed me on this.
It's funny because in the moment, you're just so confident you're going to win. You're like, that's too easy for me. You're right. That's too easy for me. Then you're like, you know what? The Adele thing. You're like, you know what? That's right. That took too long. I got buzzed. And then now that you've lost, you're like, you know what? That was BS.
I had 5 minutes to think about it, Sat, and it really resonated where we're going to go to Montreal for Dave Pignota next. This was kind of like the Montreal screw job. This is Vince McMahon coming down and just changing the course of the match.
You said I'm Earl Hebner with the quick count?
I just called you Earl Hebner, yes.
Oh, my gosh. See,
Ring the bell!
You can't win, Reach. Last week, it was me accusing you of being crooked and giving easy questions to Randy. Now he's accusing you.
I am the Tim Peel of Quizmasters, okay?
Game management.
I had to manage it, you know? I had to manage it in the game. I couldn't give you the Tupac question. It was way too easy.
I blame two people for this. Not Sat. He won. Congratulations. I blame Dan Riccio and Adele. Adele as well.
Adele? Why Adele?
I couldn't remember her name.
Mike in Victoria. That collapse was just as bad as the Maple Leafs.
I got the tough sports questions right, and I couldn't think of Adele's name. That's pathetic. But I blame Dan. Screwed me.
Sat getting his first win on the Friday quiz. The people. Well, you still got the donut next to your names, but Friday quiz every Friday here on the People's Show. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Jain of the People's Show is presented by Grip Auto and Tire, quality service you could trust, at 14 locations to serve you. David Pignota now joining us of the fourth period. He is in Montreal for Game 3 between the Habs and Golden Knights. How's Montreal treating you?
So far, so good. It rained today, so it kind of really put a damper. The last few hours have been, you know, not as exciting as they normally would be. But
okay, you're a native Montrealer, right?
Yes.
I know you enjoy coming out to Vancouver, especially in the summer. Better True. In the summer, Montreal or Vancouver?
Oh boy.
Be honest, Pegs. Be honest.
Oh, man.
They'll still allow you a banter room even if you say Montreal.
You know, I would do 1 week in each consecutively.
Okay, and Mr. Then, Switzerland.
And well, I like both. I like, well, you know, I might go Vancouver a little bit because if I'm here for a full week, 5 of the 7 days are going to be family just swarming me.
Yes.
So... So I might have a little more of an escape in Vancouver, but summer-wise, both are just awesome. So, I mean, it depends what you're feeling at what point, you know, in your life at that stage.
It is David Pignota. Go ahead, Sat.
Oh, I was just gonna ask you about the Montreal series coming up now. I mean, with all the stuff and all the good vibes about maybe going back to Montreal, I mean, what do you think the vibes are around that team now that Dominique Ducharme has come down with COVID and, you know, he's not going to be around the team for at least 10 days?
Yeah, this caught a lot of people off guard, obviously, league-wide. Look, in terms of strategy and game implementation and everything like that, I mean, everybody knows what their roles are, and I'm not sure it's going to have that significant of an effect in terms of how the play is going to be. You know, the guys in the room trust Luke Richardson. He'll be controlling the bench. They trust Alex Burrows. They trust, you know, the staff altogether. So, you know, I don't think it'll be that much of an impact or a negative impact in terms of him not being there from a game perspective. But, I mean, yeah, the questions are obviously coming up. How did this happen? When did this happen? You know, could this potentially affect or infect others on the team? So, you know, obviously, Marc Bergevin came out earlier and spoke to the media and addressed the situation. So they provided all the information to the league, to the Health Quebec and everybody, and everyone seemed to be satisfied with how everything had been going. So, you know, positive so far today in terms of nobody else testing positive. And we'll see tomorrow how things kind of unfold. Practice should be interesting. Everyone's going to be looking to see who's on the ice, who's not on the ice. But you know, it sounds like from the league perspective that everybody's comfortable with how things have been dealt with and that there was enough distancing across the board in order for A, this game to happen, and B, to make sure that this doesn't spread.
Dave, I know we don't want to talk about this, but, you know, during the season, there was a fair bit of flexibility with the schedule. There's a buffer zone. There was all of that.
Yeah.
Is there a plan of sorts or a contingency plan if this happens in the playoffs, if players are affected by this and that competitive balance could be potentially altered, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, you know, as I mentioned, it's a big concern from the NHL perspective if this does start to trickle down. You know, Duchesne was double vaccinated. His last shot was on the 9th. Of June, so, you know, not the full 2 weeks after, but, you know, pretty much everybody on the team is in and around that same time frame. You know, if this does start to trickle in and affect others within the organization, then yeah, then that poses a significant issue across the board. Now, you know, again, because people, I don't know what the actual parameters are from a league perspective, because, you know, everyone's got one shot and everyone got their second, but it's not the full term. I'm not sure how this might affect things. You know, we saw teams taking 10 days off. I don't, and right now, tentatively, Ducharme is off, away for 10 days in terms of, you know, being away from the team. He's got to stay home. So I'm not sure exactly how this may unfold. But worst case scenario, you're basically looking at pausing things for 10 days. And that is, at least from this perspective, the last thing anybody wants for the series and for the rest of the playoffs. So, yes, there are contingency plans in place, but I don't think anybody anticipated it getting to this point.
David Pignota of the Fourth Period joining us. Montreal, though, they did kind of, they had the formula going in game two, right? You know, get an early lead and basically hang on from there. But how big of an impact does Jeff Petrie getting back in this series have for Montreal?
Oh, it's big. I mean, you know, exiting the zone, you know, trying to create offensive chances from the D out, the responsibility in his own zone. I mean, everything all encompassing. This guy is a stud. And to have him back in the lineup, you know, red eyes or not, I mean, he's a ridiculous talent, you know, for this team. And you could argue he's their best defenseman, even with Shea Weber here. So it was huge having him back in, because it allowed the Canadians to go back to their attack and go back to what they're used to. They were the, for the most part, the aggressors for the first two periods, without a doubt, last game. And for the first 10 minutes, well, maybe 8 minutes, closer to 8 minutes, of game one, they were the aggressors, and then they took a step back. Last game, they had to take a step back because Vegas really upped things and took over. But you can't play 20 minutes, especially in the playoffs, and the Habs were able to keep things together. You know, to have Petrie and also John Merrill, because he kind of stabilizes things. You know, he gets a lot of flack, but, I mean, this is a solid player. And a reason why the Canadians brought him in from Detroit at the trade deadline was to help stabilize things on the third pair. But to have a guy like Petrie that can play in any situation has been huge for them to this point and was certainly significant in the last game. And they're going to count on him again tonight.
Dave, and, you know, looking at the other series here too, one of the things that impressed me so much about Tampa last night was how well they closed that game out defensively. And, hey, we all know about the cap situation and how they put guys in LTIR, they have a strong team and all that. But if they can close games out that way and play any style, how does anybody beat them?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, everyone is all over the New York Islanders for how well and how structured they are defensively and how well they play defensively. But the Tampa Bay Lightning, they play strong defensively. They're obviously a ridiculously good offensive unit. They're a physical team. They can throw the body. They brought in the right pieces last season with Coleman and Goodrow, among others. Luke Shen kind of has a backup role on defense. But they brought in pieces that could play in different areas of whatever system is needed throughout the course of a game. And if they're up and they need to shut down and lock things down, they're able to do that because they've got the pieces to do it. The system works for them. And, you know, I think I have Tampa in six, I believe, in that series. But it's going to be hard fought. We're going to see, because of how well the Islanders can you know, combat Tampa defensively. This is going to be a shot-for-shot type of series. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see any blowouts by any stretch. We haven't seen it to this point. And, you know, Tampa just so well positioned across the board, up and down the lineup. It is going to be tremendously difficult for the Islanders to get through this. The last time Tampa lost a game one in a series was against Dallas last year in the Cup Final. We saw how that turned out.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by David Pignota of The Fourth Period. And Dave, Sam Reinhart's name has been talked about here in Vancouver, I'm sure in other markets as well. But, you know, the Buffalo Sabres, if they're making this player available, especially with his contract due to expire after next year, what's the price? We've been debating that in Vancouver. There's been consideration of the first-round pick. Is it going to take more? Is it going to take less? What's your guess?
You know, I don't know that the Buffalo Sabres want to sell him and Eichel for a package of futures. You know, obviously Eichel's out there, and those conversations are picking up steam. And it's a melee of what type of package is going to go back. It's a first-round pick, your top prospect, the guy that can fill in now. If it's primarily future-driven, I don't know if they have much of an appetite to move Sam Reinhart strictly for future assets. I think they're going to be looking for somebody, and from what I've been hearing, that, yeah, maybe there's a first-round pick involved in that. But they want somebody that can either step in immediately with NHL experience or someone that's just on the cusp to be part of it as a package. So I'm not sure, like I said, that Buffalo wants to do a complete overhaul entirely and just focus on the future. They've got to put some kind of team on the ice at some point, and they're going to want to bring some guys in that can play some solid minutes. And, you know, we saw Dylan Cousins get the, you know, first taste of the NHL this season, and he's certainly going to be counted on more as next season rolls around. I think they want to be in a position where they can have some of these guys. Mittelstadt stepped up and performed a lot better. I think they want to have these, you know, these guys insulated with additional up and coming talent to go along with some of the veterans they have on this club. So, you know, Reinhart mentioned this at the exit meetings, or the press avail, excuse me, that he doesn't want to be part of another rebuild. And Rasmus Ristolainen, with 1 year left on his deal, said the same thing. If he doesn't want to be part of the rebuild, and that's what they seem to be doing in terms of moving Jack, then I think they have made it clear that they want people that want to be here. If Sam doesn't want to, they'll move him. But I just don't believe it's going to be strictly for futures if the Eichel deal is primarily focused around that type of package.
Do we know who else might be interested in Sam Reinhart? You know, there's been a lot of talk of him coming west. I've heard Ottawa kind of mentioned a little bit as well, but who's in for a player like Sam Reinhart right now, who's about to get a pretty decent contract?
Yeah. LA is part of that mix as well. Philadelphia, you know, the Kings are interesting. That they had a discussion with Buffalo during the season with respect to Eichel, and the package was laid out. They made it clear to the Sabres, they have made it clear, that they're not going to move Quentin Byfield. And that was a guy that Buffalo wanted as part of a package. So that's off the table. But they're going back and forth here and still at least keeping things open to see what type of price that may be. But they've also discussed Reinhart. Philadelphia is another team that has at some point expressed interest in Sam Reinhart. I'd be surprised if they don't. I think, look, a lot of teams are going to be interested in this kid. There's no question about it, especially the way that he performed with how depleted Buffalo was and how offensive he was this past season, capable of scoring goals in a you know, tough situation. He caught a lot more attention than he normally would have. I suspect there would be or will be a ton of interest if there's not already. But, you know, LA's part of that mix. Philadelphia, there are going to be teams that are looking for additional offensive weapons that can go back. The Florida Panthers being another one that are trying to really push for next season and amplify their roster.
Well, maybe the best player available in the free agent market this year is going to be Dougie Hamilton. And we've heard that the Carolina Hurricanes have allowed Dougie Hamilton to see what's out there potentially contract-wise for him when he hits free agency. Do you have any sense of where some favorites might be to perhaps land Dougie Hamilton?
I think from a favorites perspective, I think, you know, I don't think we're there yet. These conversations are just starting this week, or have just started this week, in terms of, you know, who's got interest, who's going to reach out. and then, you know, figure out what type of money he's looking for, and then they got to figure out what type of deal they can facilitate with Carolina if he's not sticking around there. But there are teams, there are going to be a ton, like you said, he will be the top defenseman, the top free agent available if he hits the open market. Technically, everyone's getting a head start on this now. There's going to be a considerable amount of interest in Dougie Hamilton. You know, I don't think teams view him as a number one. I think they view him as a very, very good number two, primarily offensive. You know, if he's coming in for a first pair on the right side, is he someone that can come in and complement the rest of your group and further deepen the rest of your blue line? I think, you know, those are the types of conversation that teams are having. Is it, you know, do you bring this guy in long term and move out another piece on the back end for some other assets elsewhere? You know, what type of package is he looking for, and how does he fit with this team? I suspect that there will be a lot of interest. I wouldn't be surprised if Edmonton, Winnipeg take a look and say, you know, hey, what type of deal are you looking for? Let's see if there's something that makes sense. You know, here, those are two teams that want to shore up their defensive core. I know it's a lot of money. You're probably looking at, I would imagine, somewhere around the $8 million mark is what he's at least asking for. It's going to take a big type of deal, a big commitment here. But there's going to be a ton of interest in this guy, and I'm sure we're going to start to hear more about it as next week rolls around.
There's a lot of talk about the Vancouver Canucks being aggressive this summer, but they're not the only ones. It feels like the Anaheim Ducks are ready to do something. How aggressive do you think they'll be?
Very. They've been aggressive since last offseason. You know, they were in on, you know, Dubois. They explored other alternatives to see what else is out there. They've made calls, and from what I've heard, knocked on the door and say, hey, would you trade this player? Would that player be available? They want to escalate their rebuild. I think, you know, they're going through the process right now, and I think they thought they were going to be a lot further along with some of their younger kids. You know, Comtois had a good season, but I think they thought that, you know, Sam Steele and Troy Carey and a few other guys were going to take a few extra steps forward, and it hasn't gotten there yet for them. So I think they want to start to escalate things. You know, to have Drysdale and Zegras get some NHL action this season was not part of the plan, but it helps at least give them that experience so they can kind of escalate things going forward and to have a better position next season with that group. They have other pieces they want to look at. They're definitely in on Jack Eichel. There's no question about that. And this goes back to last offseason as well. They poked around there. They did it again in the offseason. They want to make some moves. And, you know, they've got a ton of cap space. They've got a lot of, you know, wiggle room and flexibility from that perspective. But they want to bring in some top six guys. They want a first-line talent, and they really want that center position shored up. So I think they're going to go very, very hard after, you know, a guy like Jack Eichel. But it depends on, you know, where they're at. I hear the third overall pick is in play. We'll see how this goes and what type of package they want to piece together, not just for potentially Eichel, but maybe they start fishing elsewhere to see who might be available. As I mentioned, they kick the tires throughout the course of the season to a few teams and say, what would it take to get this guy off your hands? And I think those conversations are going to start to pick up steam this season, this summer.
Are Adzuri looking pretty good, eh, Dave?
Easy. It's early. It's been a couple impressive games so far. Let's temper the expectations. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
All right.
But I am going to be losing my you-know-what on Sunday when this game gets going and moving forward. Yeah, just making that perfectly clear. I'm trying to temper my own expectations as well without getting too excited.
Yeah, you and me both, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll talk next week.
You got it. Take care, guys.
There is David Pagnotta of the fourth period, as somebody on the text line got mad that I didn't italify it earlier.
I'm glad you did, because you didn't with DiPietro, but you did it here.
It is the People's Show, and some really interesting stuff there with Pagnotta. And the third overall pick is in play with Anaheim. I mean, they are big game hunting with it. They don't want to give up Zegras. They don't want to give up Drysdale, but they're willing to give up the third overall selection. I think it kind of goes to what you said and what we've talked about a little bit, Sat. Maybe there's some teams out there that are kind of discounting this draft and at least the top 10 of this draft.
Yeah, I do think that's kind of happening here. Whether that's just kind of the discussion and the discourse around the draft right now, if it's truly indicative of how people feel about the draft, but especially that top 10. Yeah, there's going to be some misses. There's always misses in that top 10, 11 range. But I think people are discounting that top two tier. We know the top tier is either 2 to 3 or 4 players deep, depending on how you kind of view it. But that next tier that kind of takes you through 9, 10, 11, it's pretty good. Like, when you project these guys, yeah, maybe a lot of them project to be second-line players, second-pairing defensemen, but that's also what a lot of people said about a lot of players in different drafts that were kind of viewed the same way, and then a couple emerged as being franchise defensemen, or somebody emerged as being a franchise centerman. There is enough talent here that one or two of those players in that second tier can be massive home run bets and a few really safe bets. I'd be very, very leery of people that discount this draft outright, especially that top 10, 11 range.
It is the People's Show, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah and Randeep Janda. Coming up, we've got Not Saying, Just Saying. Plus, we'll get back in on our thoughts of the Euros from today, as we also send you out to Montreal for game 3 of the semifinal between the Habs and Golden Knights. It is the People's Show on Sportsnet 650. People's Show presented by Grip Auto and Tire, quality service you can trust in 14 locations to serve you. Puck drop from Montreal coming up in just over a half hour's time. People's Show carrying you through until then. Some interesting news just dropping. Kevin Weeks, friend of the show, friend of the station, former Vancouver Canuck, tweeting this out 10 minutes ago. As of now, talks with Rookie of the Year Kirill Kaprizov and Minnesota Wilds have gone cold. My understanding is he's in Moscow, and it's believed CSKA is interested in signing him for KHL and Olympics. It's an interesting tweet. An interesting report.
Very, very interesting. So Kirill Kaprizov could find himself out of the National Hockey League over a contract dispute, because it's an interesting position he's in because of his contract situation. Have only played 1 year. There isn't a lot of precedent for what type of contract you should get. It's not an easy one to negotiate. If he's looking for a big payday and Minnesota's trying to hold firm because they have leverage, well, all of a sudden Kaprizov found himself a lot of leverage.
Well, some of the numbers that we heard early on were like 8x8. Remember, it came out a couple of weeks ago, and that it was moving in the direction of getting done. Interesting note here, guys, and Kevin Weeks, love him. He's one of the most respected people in the game, but interesting note here is Kirill Kaprizov's agent is Paul Theofanis. Kevin Weeks' agent, when he was playing, was Paul Theofanis. All I'm saying is this is a leverage play. This is a strong leverage play.
So just be mindful
that, yes, this is the contract talks are not going well, but this is obviously a get the news out there and put pressure on the Minnesota Wild. That's what it is.
Randeep, real or fugazi?
It's a fugazi.
Fugazi?
It's a fugazi.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm saying, okay, the number, he's going to make some serious coin. He's going to get long-term money based on the reports we heard last week. But this is obviously, there's been a bit of a dead end. Maybe there's been a stall in negotiations. This is, Paul Theofanis doing his thing.
Yeah. But I'll say this, though. So Kaprizov is 24. And because of him coming over this late and only signing, playing on that 2-year ELC, you already burned a year last year and all that sort of stuff, he cannot be offer sheeted, right? And players coming off contracts like him have zero leverage. So he doesn't have arb rights. He can't be offer sheeted by anybody. Essentially, what Minnesota can do is shove whatever contract they want down his throat. So 8x8 would essentially be a market resetting contract for a player coming off his type of situation. I'm not sure Minnesota would want to do that, even though maybe they made some headway on a long-term contract. This is absolutely a leverage play here by Kaprizov. Is it a fugazi or not? I mean, hey, Randy's calling it a fugazi, and he might very well be right. But Kaprizov has played there before. This might not be an empty threat either. If they don't pony up, he might actually just stay and play in Russia. He's done it in the past. Like, he's not a player that has shown he has to be in the NHL.
Oh, for sure. There's, if you've got another league that is willing to pay you money, and we know with the KHL, they offer money, and there's certain incentives that you get that are not maybe cap compliant like the NHL, there's another option, and they're trying to work off of that. My point is, though, you know, there are other components of this as well. Like, this is a part of the game. It's all in the game, yo. It's, and this is what leverage you have as an agent, right? You don't have that, to your point, Sat. Kaprizov doesn't have much else. So the public pressure is something that, this is a strong play. This is a Theofanis doing his thing, and there's a report out there now.
Yeah.
So this is what agents do. This is what they're paid to do. Now, will Bill Guerin buckle is the question. Because that 8x8 number, it came out, and I think most people raise their eyebrows to say, sorry, where's that coming from? Why so much? And now I got to go back and look at that report as well, just to see where did that number come from? Because for a player that doesn't have much leverage, it's one hell of a number.
At the same time, like, Minnesota, who's fooling anybody? Like, Minnesota needs Kirill Kaprizov. Like, he showed up and was an absolute star out of the gate, and brought that team a season that nobody expected, and one where they're probably playing the Colorado Avalanche, if not for Marc-Andre Fleury in that opening round series for the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, he brought new life to an organization that was kind of twiddling its thumbs and wondering, like, are we rebuilding? Are we sticking around? And all of a sudden, it's like this essentially first overall pick drops into your lap and re-energizes your franchise. Pay him. Yep. If you're Minnesota, you got to pay him.
There's no reason not to pay him. You just can't lose a talent like him, right? And that team needed somebody to be a next-level talent. And as soon as they kind of got a couple guys that popped, you saw how that team kind of took off. They always had... They were kind of like the American version of the Montreal Canadiens without having the playoff success and maybe having the goaltending and Carey Price, but a team that is balanced across the board, has a good defense, has guys that can clear the net. You know, they can play that structured style if they need to, have depth up front, but they never really could push it until Kaprizov did it. Now they have a few guys that can, you know, kind of get close to that situation there. So I wonder, though, does Minnesota look at this? Does a trade ever enter the picture here?
Ooh, man.
Does it ever enter the picture?
No,
because hey, like if you're Minnesota, if you're really worried he's not going to sign and you can't pay him, you're like, you know, what do we do here? Do you try to move him now and at least get somebody with some certainty moving forward? Because you can't afford losing him.
It's wild though, because you can think about, you know, they've been mentioned as a potential suitor for even Jack Eichel, mm-hmm. but if you're Jack Eichel and you have an option to maybe extend down the road, even stay there, your interest as a player. Without Kaprizov, is it that exciting of a place, right? Forget the extension, just about playing there. I think Kaprizov is central to who they are. But, Sat, you're right. If this hits a dead end, and if this is for real, and, you know, as of right now, I think it's a fugazi because it's a negotiation. We see this all the time where the KHL is brought up in a mm-hmm. in a conversation because a player doesn't have any other leverage. So if you're Russian, use that leverage. It's a smart play. But, yeah, Minnesota, last resort, you'd have to think about that if this legitimately hits a dead end. We got this text here from Gavin in Victoria. This is a reverse Triamkin tactic. Using the KHL as leverage for an NHL contract, Triamkin used the Canucks to get at one in Russia. Yeah. We're talking about maybe a couple more zeros in the contract, but yes.
Well, I mean, Triamkin, it's totally different conversations. But the other thing that I think about, like, you know, what happened with Panarin in Columbus too, you know, does Kaprizov want to play long-term in Minnesota? It's one of those, mm-hmm. you know, all like maybe they are offering him 8x8 or they want to offer him a long-term deal and get that worked out. But he's more of the mindset. When do I get to hit free agency? I want a contract that's kind of in that sort of range.
Yeah, because he's 24, right? He's not that far away from UFA status. I mean, it's He's like three seasons away, right? So maybe he wants to sign a shorter term contract, a 2 or 3 year deal. But maybe he wants a bigger number with that too, right? Mm-hmm. Based on his leverage, he has none. And based on RFA years, guys coming off ELCs, the next couple of years should be, relatively speaking, cheap years for him. But if he has his value at being 8 times 8, if he's asking for, say, $7 or $8 million for the next 2 or 3 years, that's just an unprecedented contract to get after 1 year on your ELC. Matthew Barzal got 7 over 3 years when he had 3 seasons of that type of production, winning the Calder Trophy, right? Pedersen is in that conversation after 2.5 seasons this past year. He got injured as well. It is unprecedented for a guy to get a huge number after 1 season, especially if he wants a short-term deal. So this might be a far trickier situation for Minnesota to navigate. And I wouldn't be surprised, especially with how that organization is trying to build towards the future, the young players they have, and how they kind of understand where they're headed, that if it gets too contentious, they may just wash their hands of it.
It is the People's Show. I just want to say, as far as comps go, I mean, Panarin would probably be kind of the one. He had 2 years as an entry-level contract with Chicago before getting a bridge deal at 2 years, $6 million per. And then, of course, he gets his huge contract from the New York Rangers in unrestricted free agency.
It does make me wonder, though, that 8x8 number, was that put out there by the Wild because they wanted to sign him long-term, and then yeah. The agent says, all right, you're going to play that game? I got this card I can play.
It's the fun of negotiating in the media and on Twitter. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. All right, it's time for Not Saying, Just Saying. As we close out the show here on a Friday, send you down to Montreal for Habs and Golden Knights Game 3. Couple of texts coming in. Trade Brock Besser for Kaprizov? Really? Is that what we're doing?
I mean, hey, I'm not against something like that. I mean, I like Brock. I don't want to trade Brock. If you're getting Kaprizov back, that's not a bad thing to do, though.
Yeah.
But are the Canucks going to make that deal and then pay Kaprizov what he wants, which is an exorbitant salary?
Even if you bridge him, you're still going to have to pay him at some point. That's going to be a huge contract. So can you pay 2 to 3 players maybe a similar salary?
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. You're going to turn into the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Or again, walk him to free agency, right? And
yeah.
It kind of really limits your window. Look at what's happened to Columbus after they made the Panarin trade. It worked out. They got a playoff series win out of it, but what else did they get? All right, not saying, just saying. Here on the People's Show, we do it every day at 4:40. I'm not saying England is underwhelmed so far at the Euros. I'm just saying the movie The Artist has been more entertaining.
Ooh. Yikes. And that movie was crap.
Oh, it's the worst Oscar-winning movie of all time.
I mean, I get some of the artistry to it, but it was not entertaining.
Yeah.
It just was not entertaining. All right, I got another England soccer one, so I'll do mine here.
Let's go.
I'm not saying Southgate will do what's right. I'm just saying England's only a couple of adjustments away from being really good.
Okay, so a little bit more optimistic. Just not about the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got another England one.
Oh, let's go.
Drag them!
You know, before the tournament even started, I was waiting for their moment to trip up, and guess what happened today? So I got to come with this. I'm not saying England needs to find another national sport. I'm just saying this soccer thing isn't working out.
Wow.
We dragged the Leafs.
Yeah.
What year did they win the cup?
Yeah.
What year did England win the World Cup?
Mm-hmm. Same timeline.
Yep.
Did Halford wear his England tracksuit again today? Do we know? Did he go full kit wanker again?
I saw Brough.
I'm not sure about Monday.
I saw him actually. I saw Jason Brough. He posted a picture or a video or something like that.
Okay.
So he was wearing the kit. I don't know if it was the shorts and the whole thing, though. My favorite Twitter account to follow back in the day.
Oh, man, it's so good.
Not rough. I mean, full kit wanker.
Have either of you ever done that? Like, gone full kit?
No.
Anywhere?
Never. I mean, the only time I've gone full kit is, like, actually wearing a kit that represented a team I was playing for.
Yeah.
But you're talking
That's
about
the, only
like,
time.
The shorts and the whole thing.
Yeah.
No. Not even.
Never.
Maybe Halloween as a kid? Like, maybe?
Maybe.
Not even that, I don't think.
No.
Even in hockey, Never. It's weird. Like, guys who would go out and play shinny, and they've got, like, the matching pants and the matching gloves and everything. Like, it's like, come on, bud. Stop.
You always have to wear something different to throw it off. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, you have to, like, change something up.
Mike G, I'm not saying Harry Kane is small, but when the pressure's on, Reach stands taller than him.
Ooh.
Ooh, damn.
Look, the problem for England isn't, like, it's not their attack. It was everything else, like their midfield. Everything was just too slow today, you know? Like, when a team's going to get in a low block like that, it's not like Scotland surprised. And if anything, Scotland had the better chances today. That's kind of the most frustrating part here for England. They might think that they're better off, you know, against some of the big clubs that they'll go in the knockout phase, like kind of solidifying themselves and setting themselves up as a counter-attacking team. But if you get France in the round of 16, guess what? They're the best defensive squad in the tournament. So yeah. Good luck. Good luck getting through them.
I'm not saying I called it, but I said after that first match against Croatia, they weren't as good as people made them out to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a similarity between Dan Riccio and England.
What's that? Oh,
much like Riccio, England needs a lift.
Poor Riccio.
Hey, man.
Always gets dragged.
I'm not ever going to back down from wearing lifts at the wedding, okay? I got married. My wife requested my partner requested that I wear lifts so the pictures would not look so weird with her in her heels. And I was just like, that's fine. I'm cool with that, okay? I can do that.
Hey, man, good
happy
for you.
Wife.
You were wearing stilts at your wedding. That's cool.
Happy wife, happy life. Reach learned that quickly. That's why he's married.
Yeah.
That's why we're not.
Valid point.
Lifts.
We got this text here. England and Scotland can't keep the ball on the ground. It looks like Surrey at Newton Athletic Park on a Wednesday at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
It wasn't the prettiest of games.
Mm-mm. It definitely was not. Torgi, I'm not saying Besser for Kaprizov is stupid, but I'm just saying this isn't eSports NHL 21. Hashtag Team Besser.
Team Besser. All right. We've got this one coming in. Garms and Langley. Not saying I'm tired of all the hockey talk. I'm just saying it's going to be a great Friday night for NBA fans. My money's on the Bucks. It's Garms and Langley.
Reach was right. Reach said yesterday.
I finally got one right, guys.
You got one right. You said the Bucks would win, and they did. I don't think they win Game 7, though.
Yeah.
But hold on, Reach. You also said Kevin Durant on the over and 35.5 points.
No, I didn't.
That was off air. Never mind.
Yeah, we talked.
Sorry. That was off air. I just wanted to
said I was taking the over on that. I said it was a high number. It was 35.5. He didn't beat it. Yeah, Bucks last night. I think the curse, though, is I actually have to tweet the pick. So if I don't tweet it, then.
Yeah, it's a Twitter bet.
Yeah. So.
Oh, you're so tempted. You want to do it today. You want to test the fates.
I don't know.
He's going to do a heat check right away after one right answer.
Clippers Jazz tonight? I don't know.
We got Krez from Coquitlam coming in. I'm not saying Croatia were hard done by yet another bogus penalty. I'm just saying I still have nightmares of Fred's flop in 2014 and the World Cup final in 2018. Mm-hmm. We got the Croatian community coming out in force.
Man, that was a brutal penalty today. Okay, like
yeah, it was.
You
yeah.
may as well just give a penalty on every corner kick or every set piece. Guys going up and like, what are you supposed to do? How do you jump with your arms like next to you, like you're a pencil? Like you can't. You're a professional athlete. You're trying to jump as high as you can to get to the ball before the other guy does. You can't jump like a pencil and get that kind of height. Stop it.
Yeah, there were a lot of curse words said at the Croatian Cultural Center today in Nanaimo, and I can't disagree with a lot of those words because that was yeah that was weak, man.
I felt bad for them too, but the Croatians are not done. They pick up a victory, they're gonna advance. They got 1 point. They need three more. They get one victory, and they can get to the knockout stage. It's not all over for Croatia.
We got this other one from Adam, the current phone guy, not the former bath guy, the current phone guy.
Okay.
Hey, Riccio, I got married in Mexico and was so burnt the day leading up to my wedding that I wore makeup. So you had lifts, he had makeup. There you go.
Shouts. Adam, you do what you got to do on your wedding day, man. It's the bottom line.
You do what needs to be done.
Uh-huh. You got to do it. You got to make up for it.
That's just too much stuff to do that needs to be done. I'm good.
Not saying, just saying. I'm not saying I'm worried about the Islanders. I'm just saying the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be tough to beat if they keep playing defense like that.
So you're not confident in your Stanley Cup winner anymore, are you?
I mean, I knew it was always going to be tough with the Lightning, but like, what are you supposed to do against that team when they're playing like that? You know, it's just so frustrating watching them. They're $20 million over the cap. They play defense as well as anybody. They got stars at every position on the ice. I mean, talk about a cheat code. The Lightning are it.
They definitely are. Okay, I got one more. I'm not saying I would buy this fight. I'm just saying I would love to see Mike Tyson knock out Logan Paul. Did you catch those comments today from him? He's trying to pick a fight with another, you know, want to make money. And normally I stay away from those fights. But apparently he's trying to get Tyson into the ring, calling him too old and that he could beat him. I would pay to see Mike Tyson beat up Logan Paul. Actually, no, I wouldn't.
I don't know if I'd
watch it.
I'm not going to spend any of my money on celebrity fighting and guys in their 50s fighting. It's just, I'm good. I don't need that.
I wouldn't spend my money, but I'd watch it because I would expect Mike Tyson to win that fight. You know what I mean?
I learned from the Roy Jones fight that Tyson hype videos more entertaining than Tyson boxing matches.
Okay, but that one, he was taking it easy because Roy Jones is his boy.
Yeah.
I think Logan Paul getting knocked into next week might be different. Hopefully.
We'd get the Eat Your Children Mike Tyson.
Yeah, the one that in the lead up to the Lennox Lewis fight. didn't fare well for Mike in that fight, though.
No, it didn't.
We got a Twitter submission. Phil, basketball Phil. Not saying, just saying. When Usain Bolt runs 100 meters faster than you shoot a foul shot, it's on you, Giannis.
Chris and Duncan. I'm not saying I'm super short. I'm just saying my super tall wife had me stand on a log in our wedding photo. There you go. See? You do what you got to do on the wedding day.
Require modern solutions.
Okay, I got an idea here, Reach. You already have the Spro brand.
I like where this is going.
Spro branded lifts. Put your name on it, man.
Spro lift?
Spro lift. You get a lift through caffeine, but also a lift literally.
Okay.
No?
I'll put it in the development stage.
It's going to go in your R&D department?
Yeah.
This is my free gift to you. No royalties.
All right. That's it for Not Saying, Just Saying here on The People's Show. We play it every day at 4:40. And, of course, you get your submissions in. It is for the people on The People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randy Janda. Quick pick on Game 3.
I'm going Vegas on this one. I think 3,500 is going to feel like 35,000, I swear to God, but Vegas is too good. However, Chandler Stephenson officially out. He's not playing tonight's game. I still think Vegas gets it done, though.
Yeah, I think Vegas ekes one out 3-2.
You know what? I'm going to take Montreal.
Let's go.
I'm going to take Montreal.
So bet Vegas minus 1.5.
Probably. Probably.
It's like gambling when you know you're going to win.
For producer Josh Elliott, Wolf Canberra, Bick Nazar, my co-hosts Satyar Shah and Randeep Janda, I'm Dan Riccio. You are the people. We are the People's Show. Back on Monday. Enjoy the game tonight on Sportsnet 650.